Part 4, Chapter 2, in which Harvey spends a night at the house of Atreus. Footnote. The house of Atreus was one of the more tragic of Greek mythology. Its history of atrocities can be traced back to Tantalus, the grandfather of Atreus, who, among other things, served up his son Pelops as a feast for the gods. Harvey is still reading on the airplane. And this is what he's reading. At 6:11 the next morning, rosy-fingered Dawn spread her glittering rays over the dirty roofs of Athens, and Captain Harvey rose from a dreamless sleep to find himself in the train station waiting room. He did not know how he had arrived there, if it had been by divine intervention, or if he had followed a dog or a cat, but he interpreted it as a sign he should not delay in his journey, and he got on the first coach he found. The train took him to Corinth, and from there he was pulled onto a bus that left him at a town near the ruins of Mycenae. By now it was late afternoon, and Harvey was happy to be out of Athens, walking along a tree-lined road bordered by olive trees and fields. Rural Greece was not like the rest of Western Europe in 1979. It was still sparsely populated, and a person could walk for miles without seeing another human being. Along the way to the ruins, it began to cloud and sprinkle, and the gray asphalt turned dark in the rain. With the silvery water on its surface, the road was converted into an enormous mirror, reflecting the foliage of the trees. When Harvey noticed the reflection, he was temporarily disoriented, and he began to hop from branch to branch, so as not to fall to the sky. By the time he reached the foot of the ancient city, the mirror had become a river that carried him to the tomb of Agamemnon. When he stepped inside, he was enveloped in darkness. He stretched out his hands to encounter the wall, seemingly of stone masonry, then followed it up without reaching the ceiling. He decided to calculate the size of the chamber by pacing around it. But before he could make a full circle, he was overcome by the closeness of the air and dropped off to sleep. He remained there, prostrate on the earthen floor, until he dreamt a voice, and then he dreamt another. "Dear Zeus in heaven and Poseidon in the sea, who is this that intrudes upon our homeless hero? Is it the noble Orestes, returned with friend Pylades, to avenge the death of his father?" Footnote. Agamemnon, the father of Orestes, was killed by his wife Clytemnestra, and by his arch-rival Aegisthus. "O sins of heaven and sins of earth, must Harvey too partake of the poison of the house of Atreus?" Harvey made for the entrance, but Orestes stopped him. "Halt! Who art thou that lurks in this hellish dark? Speak! Be thee man or beast?" "I am Orestes," replied Harvey, taking on the personality of the other. "No," roared Pylades, "I am Orestes." Footnote. Pylades, most famous of classical friends, once attempted to save the life of Orestes by claiming he was his friend so that he would be killed instead of Orestes. He later married Orestes' sister, Electra. Back to the text. "No," echoed the tomb, "I am Orestes." "No," roared Orestes, "I am Orestes." "My God," thought Harvey, when the stewardess came with breakfast, "I've been transported to 1200 B.C. He wolfed down his omelet and quickly returned to the manuscript in his hands. "May angels defend us," Orestes continued. "Be thou spirit of health or goblin damned, bring with thee airs from heaven or blasts from hell, be thy purpose wicked or worthy, thou com'st in so questionable a shape that I will speak to thee. I'll call thee Agamemnon, king, father. Answer me, who art thou truly?" "I am thy father's spirit," answered Harvey with the voice of the tomb, "doomed to restless prowling by night, and by day confined to darkness in this dismal cave. It is justice I seek, to avenge my most foul and unnatural death. Doubt not, dear father, said Orestes, that thy justice be done, for I, with wings as swift as meditation, shall sweep to thy revenge. Step forward, dear spirit, and meet my friend. I once had such a friend, said Harvey, embracing Pylades. Tell me, fatherly phantom, said Orestes, can you help me to avenge your death, taking arms against my mother and the doubly damned Aegisthus? Footnote. Aegisthus also murdered Agamemnon's father, Atreus. No, said the captain, you must strike the blow. But how to kill a man, said Orestes, and how to kill one's mother? Revenge. In the word there is justice and speed, action without thought, but in the deed there is blood and a breath to be stopped. A man can be poisoned, said Pylades. No, said Harvey, for the violence of his death must match the violence of my own, though it need not be effected with equal cowardice. But I hesitate, said Orestes. For was it not you who sacrificed my sister Iphigenia? And to what purpose? That the ships might sail to Troy for the wanton and treacherous Helen? A daughter for the sake of a brother's wife? Is that right? Is that just? No, groaned the captain, turning his thoughts to the abandoned Alessandra and gripping his chest where Aphrodite had landed an arrow of remorse. There is no justice in life, except that a man must live with himself. Footnote. The author is comparing Agamemnon's sacrifice of his daughter Iphigenia, so that his ships might sail for Troy, to Harvey's sacrifice of the love of Alessandra, so that he might return to his future. Arrgh, growled Orestes, the man with a load on his mind. Conscience makes him a coward. O native resolution, sicklied over with thought! O fate, like the edge of the slicing iron, I feel the urge to flee. Arrgh, growled Harvey, to flee or not to flee? But how can you hesitate, cried Pylades, shaking his friend by the shoulders, when the hand that stilled your father caresses your mother's breast? Clytemnestra, beast of loathing, undeserving the name mother, what to call her and be right? Viper double-fanged, hundred-headed Scylla, smouldering midwife of doom, relishing the spattering of blood as the buds relish the rain. Argh! Roared Orestes, taking on the conviction of Harvey and his friend. I have a score to settle with death. And so saying, he turned his steps to the city. As soon as he left, a group of tourists entered the tomb, and the captain awoke from his dream. The tourists were blinded by the dark, and several of them walked into Harvey as if he wasn't there. He fell in with them, and was drawn back to the station at Corinth, from where he made his way down to the docks. There was a good wind blowing beneath the star-filled sky, and the captain could hear the waves calling him to find Mahogany. He needed his friend now more than ever, for Aphrodite was beginning to torment him with the memory of Alessandra, and only someone else's worries could stop his mind from spinning. So thinking, he sequestered a boat from the harbor and started out to sea. Joy, he cried, feeling the roll of the water beneath him. It had been 21 chapters since last he rode the waves, and he could feel the tide rise in his blood. Joy, he cried again, our life is closed, our life begins, the long anchorage we leave. The ship is clear, she leaps, swiftly she slips through the night. Joy, shipmate, joy! As he breathed in the cool salt air, his spirit became soothed and at peace, and when the sails bellied out with the wind, he could hear the bow cutting across the bending arms of the sea.